No serfs were about. By long custom, the harvest day ended with the meal served in the fields, and the lord could demand no work afterward. No monastic sexton, appraising his water clock to mark the canonical hours, ever gauged time so finely as a manorial serf. Matters differed among the freeholders. Dietrich had noted much late activity in shed and garden and within walls by candlelight in his passage through the village. But a man who labored on his own account did not watch the sun as closely as one who labored for another's. Dietrich's entry into the curial grounds was met with much indignation by the resident geese, who harried and chivied the priest as he made his way to the hof. "Next Martinmas," Dietrich scolded the birds, "you will grace the hare's table." But the chastisement had no effect, and they escorted him to the doors of the hall, announcing his arrival. Franz Ambeck's cow, impounded for trespass on the Salent, watched placidly while she awaited her ransom. Gunther, the mayordomo, conducted Dietrich to a small scriptorium at the far end of the hall, where the Herr Manfred sat at a writing table below a slit window. Through the window drifted the wood smoke of evening meals, the cries of hawks circling the tower battlement, the clanging of the smithy, the slow toll of Joachim at the Angelus bell on the other side of the valley, and the amber remains of the afternoon light. The sky was deepening to indigo, rimmed by bright orange on the underside of the clouds. Manfred sat in a curul chair, fashioned of gracefully curved rosewood, whose slats ended in the heads of beasts, his pen scratched across a sheet of paper. He glanced up at Dietrich's appearance, bent once more to his writing, then put quill aside and passed the sheet to Max, who stood a little to the side. "Have Willemer make fair copies of this and see it sent to each of my knights." Manfred waited until Max had gone before turning to Dietrich. His lips twitched into a brief smile. "Dietrich, you are prompt. I've always admired that in you." He meant obedient to a summons, but Dietrich forbore from pointing it out. It might not even be true, but neither of them had tested it as yet. Manfred indicated a straight-backed chair before the desk and waited until Dietrich had seated himself. "What's this?" he asked, when the priest placed a pfennig before him. "The fine for Ambeck's cow," he said. Manfred picked up the coin and regarded Dietrich for a moment before placing it in a corner of his desk. "I'll tell Everard. You know, if you always pay their fines for them, they'll lose their dread of delinquency." Dietrich said nothing, and Manfred turned to his coffer and removed a bundle of parchments wrapped in oiled skin and tied up in string. "Here. These are the latest tractates from the Paris scholars. I had them copied by the stationers while we idled in Picardy. Most of them are direct from the master's copies, but there were a few from the Merton calculators who interest you so much. Those are from secondary copies, of course, brought over by English scholars." Dietrich paged through the bundle. Buridan's On the Heaven, his questions on the 8 books of physics, a slim volume on money by a student named Oresme, Swinehead's Book of Calculations. The very titles conjured up a swarm of memories, and Dietrich recalled for a blinding moment of unbearable longing lost student days in Paris. Buridan and Ockham and he, arguing the dialectic over tankards of ale. Peter Aureoli, scowling and interrupting with the petulance of age. The free-for-all quod libets with the master determining on questions thrown up by the crowd. Sometimes in the rustle of the spruces that surrounded Oberhochwald, Dietrich thought he could hear the disputations of doctors, masters, inceptors, bachelors, and wondered if peace and seclusion had been too high a price to pay. He found his voice with difficulty. "Mein Herr, I hardly know what—" He felt himself as one of Buridan's famous asses, uncertain which manuscript to read first. "You know the price, commentaries, if you think 'em useful, suitable for a kettlehead like me. You must have your own tractate."
"Compendium."
"Compendium, then. When it is finished, I will have it sent to Paris to your old master."
"Jean Buridan," Dietrich said reflexively,
at the school called Sorbonne. But did he really want to remind Paris where he was? So, Manfred steepled his hands under his chin. I see we have a Franciscan about. Dietrich had been expecting the inquiry. He laid the manuscripts aside. His name is Joachim of Hippolzheim, from the Strasbourg Friary, living here now since 3 months. He waited for Manfred to ask why the Minorite was staying in a backwoods parish, rather than in the bustling cathedral town of the Elsass. But instead the Lord cocked his head and placed a finger alongside his cheek. Von Herbold? I may know his father. His uncle, that would be. His father's the younger brother. But Joachim forswore his inheritance when he took the vow of poverty. Manfred's lip quirked on one side. I wonder if he gave it up faster than his uncle cut him off. He won't give me any trouble, will he? The boy, I mean, not the uncle. Only the usual denunciations of wealth and display. Manfred snorted. Let him protect the high woods without the means to support a troop of armsmen. Dietrich knew all the counter-arguments and saw in the Lord's quickly narrowed gaze that Manfred remembered that he did. The rents and services from the peasantry supported more than armsmen. They supported fine clothing and banquet feasts and clowns and minnesingers. Manfred kept a household suited to his station and was lavish in its maintenance. And if protection was needed, it lay at the lower end of the valley, at Falcon Rock, far nearer than Muldorf or Crecy. I will keep him on a check rein, sire, he assured the hare, before old matters could be resurrected. See that you do. Last thing I want is an exploratore, asking questions and distressing people. Again he paused and gave Dietrich a significant look. Nor you, I should think. Dietrich chose to misunderstand the resurrection. I try not to distress people, but I cannot help asking questions now and then. Manfred stared a moment. Then he reared his head and laughed, smacking the table with his palm. By my honor, I've missed your wit these past 2 years. He sobered instantly, and his eyes seemed to look somewhere else without actually turning. By God, if I have not, he said more quietly. It was bad, then, the war. The war? No worse than others, save that Blind John died a fool's death. I suppose you've heard that tale by now. Charged into the melee, roped to his 12 paladins, who hasn't heard? An imprudent act for a blind man, I would say. Prudence was never his particular strength. All those Luxembourgers are mad.
His son is German king now.
Yes, and Roman Kaiser, too. We were still in Picardy when the news reached us. Well, half the electors had voted Karl anti-king while Ludwig was still alive, so I don't suppose they were seized by any great hesitation once he was dead. Oh, poor old Ludwig. To survive all those wars with Habsburg and then fall off his horse while hunting. I suppose old Graf Rudolf, no, it's Frederick now, I've heard, and Duke Albrecht have sworn their oath, so that settles matters for me. Do you know why Karl did not die with John at Crecy?
Were I to guess, Dietrich said, I would say he had no ties to his father.
Manfred snorted. Or a rope uncommonly long. When the French chivalry charged the English longbows, Karl von Luxemburg charged in the opposite direction.
Then he is a wise man or a coward?
Wise men often are. The hare's lips twitched. It's all that reading that does it, Dietrich. It takes a man out of the world and pushes him inside his own head, and there is nothing there but spooks. I hear Karl is a learned man, which is the one sin that Ludwig never committed.
Dietrich made no reply. Kaisers, like popes, came in divers sorts. He wondered what would happen now to those Franciscans who had fled to Munich.
Manfred rose and walked to the lance window and stared out.
Dietrich watched him brush idly at the grit of the window stone. The evening sun bathed the Lord's face, giving his skin a ruddy cast.
After a silence, he said, "You haven't asked why it's taken me 2 years to return."
"I imagined you had difficulties," Dietrich said with care.
You imagined I was dead.
Manfred turned away from the window.
Assumption's natural when you think how thick the dead lie between here and Picardy.